right, I'm looking at the Blue Jays lineup here. Man, oh man, does it feel like opening day? George Springer, Bo Bichette, Vladdy Jr., Justin Turner, Varsho, Jansen, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio, Chris Bassett on the mound against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That very much looks like an opening day lineup for a little more than 2 weeks away in Tampa. It is Blair and Barker. Mr. Barker is down in Florida. I believe we're going to bring Mr. Barker on right now. Look at you.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You got a nice little setup there. No wind so far, knocking wood. Not as good as in the fan pregame where you had the water in the background and the boats. That was a nice touch, I thought.
Yeah, look, I'm a man of the people.
I try
and bring it as many times as I can possibly bring it. So hopefully I'm doing that and the fans enjoy it and we're bringing some good content.
Yeah, response seems to be good. I think people are still a little worried about the team. We haven't done much to dissuade them on that. But that's all right. This is an opening day lineup, isn't it? Basically.
Well, boy, sure seems that way. I think the first four guys were predictable. It was after that you really didn't know how John Schneider and the whole entire, khaki world wanted to figure out how to do the bottom end of that, lineup.
It looks very much left, right, left, right, left. That may be the way John Schneider goes a lot of the times here after the top four.
Well, I was about to say that until you rudely interrupted me. I was about to say that, 5 through 9, perfect world against a right-handed pitcher. You would love to see, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty. It's just how do you use your lefties? I think they like the adjustment that Varsho has made. He looks a little bit more predictable with his at-bats. That's a giant word for a team that is trying to go where the Blue Jays want to go, is how do you throw dudes in the lineup in certain spots that are predictable? And just saying that Varsho has opened up the stance a little bit, he's able to get to a few more quadrants of the strike zone. I ain't going to hit 280. It's not about that. It's about just being more competitive on, obviously, the elevated fastball, occasionally turning that thing around and cracking some concrete in right center at the Rogers Center. That would be nice, and I think they think he's capable of doing that. And it could be a lot of traffic with whoever's sitting in the five hole has to have those bats, has to be a tougher out. And, I think this sort of, you said it opening the show, it just sure seems like this lineup is against a right-handed pitcher sort of the way they want to go. I'm sure it'll change. I know they like the catcher sitting in the five hole, probably against some lefties, and they want the best guy in every spot. And perfect scenario, it's lefty, righty, lefty, righty. If it doesn't work out that way where the lefties are hitting the way they want them to hit, it'll be whoever is, no matter what side of the plate they hit from.
We talked a lot last year about Dalton Varsho and the move to start him in the cleanup spot. Everybody admits it didn't work out, and I think if you ask John Schneider.
You could say it was dumb.
It was dumb.
You could say it.
Yeah. And if John Schneider had a redo, he wouldn't do it.
No question.
What's the difference, though, between fourth and fifth? And is it maybe that not the point here as much as who is hitting ahead of him, Justin Turner, and the changes he's made? In other words, is there a big mental difference for Dalton Varsho between hitting cleanup and hitting fifth?
Yeah, I think it was when you're traded to a team that's trying to do what the Blue Jays are doing in the American League East, and you're asked to protect dudes that are hitting in front of you who are supposed to carry your team and your lineup for long periods of time. It's a lot to ask a dude who has never been asked to do that. Going from the four spot to the five spot, you ain't protecting in the five hole.
Correct.
You're run producing in the five spot. And again, that gets back to those mechanic changes to he's opened up a little bit more. His swing's a little flatter. He likes to say chopping wood. That's not physically possible consistently to be able to do that. As a lefty, you were born a little natural uppercut in your swing. He ain't no different, right? He makes contact, the barrel is below the hands, but he's trying to talk himself into that. If that ball is up, somewhere around the belt and maybe a tick above the belt, he just wants to mentally be able to talk himself into, because of those changes, getting on top of that thing and just boogie whipping that thing as hard as he can to the pull side and at least being competitive on that pitch. And I think organizational wise and Dalton Varsho wise, they've sort of, you know, established that, and it's enabled John to at least tinker, Jeff, I think is the right word, with Dalton hitting in the five spot.
All right, let's get to the news of the day. Obviously, Vladdy Jr. Is returning. He's in the lineup today. That's after missing three days with a knee contusion, although we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. You know that a guy feels like he's a veteran player when he can kind of call when he can kind of call the ball in spring training, right? You've reached that point if you're Vladdy, where you, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
What about Wednesday against Pittsburgh? Why don't we do it Wednesday?
I was joking with a couple of coaches and saying, I can't even believe you guys said that out loud.
Yeah, exactly.
One of your superstar offensive players is talking about a contusion. Just say you need some rest to give him some time off. Don't say why you're giving him a time off. But look, I just saw him taking some ground balls before I came on the show here. He looks exactly the way Vladdy's supposed to look. And
John Schneider,
fingers crossed, he rakes.
John Schneider did say he'll be the designated hitter as the club slowly works him back. Joey Votto is going to... Joey Votto is going to.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Basically, what John Schneider meant is Vladdy told him he'd like the DH until the start of the regular season.
Bubble wrap, Jeff, for the next 13 days.
Exactly.
Bubble wrap.
Joey Votto will debut in a minor league game today, he'll play his first game as a Blue Jay today in a minor league contest. That'll be against Detroit Tigers minor leaguers in Dunedin. We know that Yariel Rodriguez will make his Grapefruit League debut on Sunday. Two innings appears to be the target for him. Kevin Gausman, who's suffering from shoulder fatigue, felt good in a side session, and the team will determine next steps for him tomorrow. It really does sound as if you just look at the schedule right now, the Jays have it lined up to have Berríos and Chris Bassitt start those first two games in Tampa, which is probably not the biggest surprise.
No, I don't think so. Well, you know, look, I just about 30 minutes ago talked to the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, and you know, there's some guys at that level that are a little nervous about some guys that aren't throwing and you know that they need to try and figure out as quickly as possible, because we all know, you know, they're a better team with Kevin Gausman throwing every 5 days, and they're, you know, making sure that if he is not the opening day starter, that hopefully he'll pitch game three or game four of the season and not have to wait a couple of weeks into the season. Because again, look, no offense to Mitch White, but how much do you want to see that throw? And I'll raise my hand right now and say I mean, it's when you're the long relief guy out of the pen, there's a reason why you're that, right? There's bad things that'll happen most of the time when you're coming into the game. And I think that's sort of where, you know, they're saying all the right things about Mitch White. But I think for me, it is what it is. Yeah, look, the Yariel Rodriguez thing, I don't know what the expectations are with him. I think they like the way his breaking stuff looked to the couple of left-handed hitters that he threw against yesterday. I think that was the whole thing of why they threw Votto and Biggio in there, was just to see how it looked, get feedback from those two guys. I think they liked the feedback that they did get, and him being able to command, you know, the velocity, I think, was a little erratic. It was all over the place. It wasn't consistent, which I guess is sort of what you expect from a guy that didn't pitch all of last year. And, you know, again, it's the nerves getting past that, just having him go out and compete with mechanics and being able to start, right, locating the fastball away if a dude can't hit that, or throwing a slider, you know, get me over for strike one, and being able to eliminate somebody with a slider. So, it's a process. I know everybody don't like to hear that, and I'm in that mix, but with him, that's what it is. I will be intrigued to how it looks when he's in live action, you know, running on the field, having the heartbeat, but I think they like it. They like the stuff. If the stuff plays, it's just getting them used to throwing the innings up and downs, and, you know, they like that. Sooner than later, I think there'll be a better team with him on it.
Yeah.
Just when he's on it is the question.
Yeah, and I think if you're the Blue Jays, you know, in addition to that first series in Tampa, one of the things you want to do, you want to have Yusei Kikuchi going at Yankee Stadium, because Yusei Kikuchi pitches well at Yankee Stadium. He's clearly comfortable. I mean, the numbers jump out at you. So you would not, I would think, if you're the Jays, you'd rather not have to use him in the third game against Tampa. That's just me.
It's funny that you mentioned Yusei Kikuchi. I just left the half field because I was having a conversation with the pitching coach who had just been on the half field with Yusei working on pickoff moves. And it's just, you know, I sort of, you know, roll my eyes and be like, you know, it's eyewash that you're out there. I mean, he was by himself. He was, it's an interpreter and Petey and Yusei out there working on, you know, how do you have a better pickoff move even to second base, right? It's those little things that if you don't feel right, those innings would you say that just sort of fall off the cliff. And if you walk a couple guys because you don't have a good release point, picking a guy off could help you. And just for him being out there, you know, having those conversations and actually going through the motions of PD, they were filming it so he can actually see it, go back and study it and just work on, you know, how it looks. A little deception on if you get a guy at second with a big enough lead, you have a pickoff there, could get you out of some tough innings. So I just want to throw that in there. Yep. To actually the guys that are not pitching and not doing the things that you actually see in live action, they are working their tail off trying to get better and help their team, which is a big deal. You got to remember, Jeff, they gave up a lot of stolen bases last year. I mean, they were sixth worst in baseball. I don't think that's a giant deal, but when you got some dudes hurt, the guys that are pitching, that may become a thing. So if you can pick somebody off, it can only help.
We will be joined, by the way, by Ben Shulman at the bottom of the hour. He'll have the call of the game today between the Jays and Pirates from Dunedin on Sportsnet. 1 o'clock is the first pitch. Want to talk about Alejandro Kirk. And obviously we'll get into Santiago Espinal and kind of that battle. But I want to talk about Alejandro Kirk because everything I'm seeing from him, and clearly I don't have the same insight you do, but everything, my initial reaction to seeing him and everything I'm hearing from people, both, you know, via text and also people who are there, is that he looks much better than he did last year. Now, I mean, I'll turn it over to you. What are you seeing?
Yeah, look, I haven't walked over and picked him up. I know that's the one thing that everybody wants to sort of throw or point the finger at is he lost weight? Does he look? He doesn't to me. Like, he looks exactly the same Alejandro Kirk as he's always looked. So I can't comment on any of that. I'm sure they've picked all that apart and, you know, had him standing on scales. And because I would think that if you're, you know, getting, say, I don't know, 85 games behind the plate out of him, I mean, that can only help everybody. He's really good back there. Like, he's, you know, I'm not sure you trust in calling games all the time. That's sort of his weakness, but it's all the other things he does really well with the blocking and you know, just the stealing of the strike, you know, tricking the blind guy seems to be a giant thing and a giant theme in this camp. So
that's incorrect. I know what you're talking about. It was so politically incorrect.
He's really good. He's really good at that. I mean, it is. It's basically, if I'm an umpire, I'm chaffed because that's all you ever hear is how good they are at tricking me.
Where did they bring the automatic strike zone in?
Yeah, I talked to a guy that's been here having that conversation with the higher ups here, and they're telling me that won't be at the big league level for another 5 or 6 years. So who knows where me and you'll be in 5 or 6 years. We may not have to worry about it.
But yeah,
that's again for a different day. Yeah, look, I do think they seem to tell me that behind the scenes, if you can give Kirky a scheduled day, meaning basically write that day out telling him exactly what he needs to do when he needs to do it, it just sort of gets the best out of Alejandro Kirk, which is a great thing, right? Not everybody can make out their own schedule and you know, figure out how they want to do it, when they want to do it, how much they want to do it. So I think they figured out the routine behind the scenes that can help with all of those kind of things. And look, offensively, this just gets back to, he wasn't good enough. Now, everybody seems to say if he can give you an 800 OPS, two dudes as everyday catchers last year gave 800 OPSs. I ain't asking for that. I'm asking for some big hits, right? That's the thing, is dudes that are on base in scoring position, get the giant hit. And if he can do that consistently, the numbers at the end of the season will be what Alejandro Kirk and everybody else that expects the bat the ball skills and you know, the bat speed and the getting the ball in the air and not hitting into so many double plays, I think will end up being the way everybody wants it to be. And you know, optics-wise, I think they like it. Everything, the totality of Alejandro Kirk.
Brandon Hyde of the Baltimore Orioles did an interview a couple of days ago, and they were talking about, you know, the Orioles having a young team and how it just seems like they have a bunch of guys who got married in the offseason. They had some guys who had their first kids in the offseason. And, you know, I wonder if maybe, you know, we know Alejandro Kirk reported late to camp last year with, and was the team agreed to it after the birth of his first child. You know what? I mean, guys are human beings. And I wonder if maybe, look, I'm not going to make excuses for Alejandro Kirk, but it's a lifestyle change. And if you are a guy who depends on a schedule, you know, no one's going to cry for Alejandro Kirk because he's making good money. He's a major league ball player. But it's definitely, I mean, everything gets interfered with. It's part of the deal. You know, you can have the most understanding partner in the world, but regular schedules, I mean, your schedule becomes the child's schedule. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we need to kind of keep that in mind with him.
They were one of the worst offenses in baseball. I mean, you can't say it any other way. And a lot of that had to do with the underperformance of him. And they, I think, expect more. And whatever that was, they're trying to get to the bottom of it. And they think, you know, a lot of that had to do with when, you know, his child was born. It was a lot up into spring training. Mm-hmm. He missed some time. He tried to rush it. You know, that was a big topic of conversation last year in spring training. And, you know, it seems to matter. I who am I to say that that's not the, or that is the reason? Because I'm not him. I mean, he knows sort of, and probably everybody that's close to him. I just know how he looks now. And offensively, look, he's hitting the balls that he's supposed to be hitting where they're supposed to be going. The ball's in, he's quick enough and mechanically sound enough to get it out front and pull it. If it's away and it's a little up, he's able to stay behind it, level out his swing, and hit a line drive to right. Other than that, more power to him.
All right, let's talk, shall we, about, I guess, the bottom of the roster. And we talked about today being opening day. Kevin Biggio's at second base. I think we agree we're working towards a Biggio / Davis Schneider platoon at second, at least at the start of the year. Of course, Joey Votto, I mentioned, will be playing in a minor league game tomorrow. Joey Votto's going to be with the team at some point. I think it's safe to say he'll definitely be here by the home opener, even if he starts in the minors or in Florida or whatever, unless he gets hurt. You've got Daniel Vogelbach, probably break camp with the team as a result of that. But then you've got Santiago Espinal and Ernie Clement. Now, we spent a lot of time talking about it because by and large, the team is set every place else for the most part. What do you think it's going to come down to for Ernie Clement and Santiago Espinal? Because I'm not just looking at numbers, Kevin. I'm thinking about what John Schneider said last year, what Ross Atkins has said at times, what we'd noticed last year, what you said last year about Ernie Clement. To me, the guy's a major leaguer. He's a major leaguer.
Yeah, from everybody that I've talked to, it sounds like it's headed in that direction, right? There's basically, like you mentioned, Clement, Vogelbach, Schneider, and Espinal. And it seems like Vogelbach and Schneider are on the team. Like, it's the Joey Votto thing is sort of Joey Votto driving that bus. He's going to be the guy that tells the organization and John Schneider if and when he's ready to go. Remember, he's 40. It's just a fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, I ain't making that up. And it's how he feels. That's why you'll see a couple of games at the minor leagues the next couple of days. And then Sunday at the split squad, whether it's on the road or at home, I think that's sort of the targeted day where they want to see Joey in a big league game. And again, they're going to be a lot of conversation back and forth between Joey and John. That's just a fact. They'll figure out how you're doing and when you're doing it. And you know, I think probably the Blue Jays are a better team with Joey on it. If you can get the Joey that they've been seeing up until not last year, because last year he was injured a lot. If he's a healthy Joey, that competitive, I know me at bat with a dude at second, they really want that from Joey. And if they can, you know, get that, Joey will be on the team sooner than later. Clement and Espinal, look, I've been told from, you know, a couple of people that if the season started tomorrow, it would be Ernie Clement. And I then raised my hand and said, well, what's that mean for Santiago Espinal? And then I keep getting trade. Last year I said, well, why didn't you play him more? He's sort of part of the core. He ain't the core, but he is sort of lumped in with the dudes, right? That, you know, you get called up. He's sort of really good buddies with Bo Bichette. You know, they ride to the field together all the time. So you don't want to sort of that relationship, you know, take that guy off that plays short and is the face of your franchise. So they are sort of trying to maneuver around that. That is a thing. And Santiago Espinal's a really good player. But last year, quite frankly, he just didn't come in good enough shape to play all the time at the big league level. And that really hurt him when it come to first moves and arm strength and accuracy of his arm. And because he's a defensive player first, right?
Yep.
And so when you're suffering at that part of it because of your conditioning, and then you add to the bat speed part of it, not being able to catch up the velocity the way you did the years past, and just sort of you're the 26th guy, then you start trying to figure out better ways to fill that spot and make your team better. And I think that's where they're at. They just like Ernie better doing things line to line. I think that's the gist of this thing is he can sit over there. Like I said, I did that. I tried that. Sit over there for a couple of days and look like when they do put him in the game, like he hasn't been sitting over there for a couple of days. And, you know, I think that's, again, he's predictable. And I think there's some unpredictability with Santiago Espinal that I think this time, and especially early in the season with where the Yankees now, obviously we know the injury thing with the Yankees and with where the Orioles are at, all these games matter. I mean, you can get so far behind in April because of what those teams have done. That's going to be real hard to dig out of. So they are trying, I think, to take the best 26 North. And I've been told that one of those is Ernie Clement.
Yeah. And Santiago Espinal does have options left. Although, I mean, I've got to think if you're the Blue Jays, you would at least. And the problem is that there's still so many players. There's so many free agents out there right now. There's so many guys out there that I don't know what the market would be for a guy like Santiago Espinal.
Yeah,
I just don't. And guys are going to be, you know, guys are going to be cut. Spring training,
you have to take him off the 40, man. Do you put him on the 40? I mean, you got 7 days then to figure out what you want to do with him, whether it's trade, whether it's release him, whether it's put him back on the 40, man. Like, oh, do they want to go that route? I mean, is there enough respect there? Do they think they have enough quality depth that if one of those guys go down, Bo goes down? Is there another shortstop they could call up? I don't know where it's at. Do you know where it's at other than Ernie Clement? I mean, they got IKF. But
I mean, I guess they have a guy like Leo Jimenez.
I'm saying if somebody
gets hurt in the middle of the season, we're talking about who you're going to bring up. I'm not talking about making the team right now, but you asked, is there another shortstop down there? I don't know. Maybe there's clearly there isn't going to be another shortstop that's going to be able to replace Bo, but I mean, can't be that hard to find somebody you can bring up for 4 days if something happens.
Yeah, I will say that you can tell there's urgency with Santi. I talked to Santi yesterday when I was here, and I've seen him in 3 different batting cages in 1 day. I saw him in the short field doing bunts. I saw him in another cage working on the machine. I saw him in another cage working on breaking balls and just trying to be himself. So, yeah, there's a lot happening. Like, you can tell there's urgency, there's competition. And, again, you know, for that 26th spot, what's wrong with a little competition? Brings out the best of people. I've been a part of that. And just getting an opportunity to compete is a big deal for those guys.
Do you think there is a point in spring training? Again, looking at today's lineup, do you think there's a point in spring training where everything is about spring training and getting ready, et cetera, but do you think there's a point where the manager says, okay, I want to see opening day. I want to see my everyday lineup. I just want to see it in the field. I want to see what it looks like. You know, and then tomorrow we can, if we're on the road or whatever, we can mix guys around. But I would like to see what it looks like. Do you think teams reach a point in spring training where the manager wants to see that?
Yeah, I think they're there. Look, today you said it when you read out the lineup. Other than Vladdy DH, and yeah, I don't think they want to see a ton of that. They're right. I think, a better team with Vladdy playing first because, you know, who the everyday DH is and what their ages are and how important they are to the middle of the order. You know, Turner's a big deal because he can't clean up. I mean, I know he hasn't done it a ton in his career, but you saw yesterday with the at-bats with dudes in scoring position. Dude, using the big part of the field. Jeff, I talk to you about this all the time. It's shortening up and not trying to get frisky and hit the three-run homer when there's only a dude on base. Like, there's something to that. You got to have experience enough to be able to do that, even spring training. We saw that yesterday with Justin. So, yeah, I think he's there. I talked to him today, standing after his little scrum that he had with the media. I talked to him. It's time. Like, they're getting – it's, you know, it's a little Groundhog Day to this thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of holes to fill. You know, we talked about Santiago Espinal and the 26th guy and, you know, where they're going to be with the rotation. If a couple of guys in the Gosman and the Manoah can't start the first week, how do they fill those blanks? You know, I just saw Bowden Francis walk by, who is a giant human dude.
He's a big dude.
About leaning on 97. Yeah. Well, you talk about he makes me look like a child, which I, you know, it's kind of cool just to stand beside him and have a conversation with him. So it's just little things like that. And, you know, the everybody, I think, on these really good teams, the Jays are a really good team, get tired of spring training. I know the fans like to come down here and have conversations and see the players close enough personal, but the players, you know, again, we always say this, spring training is too long. Yep. Even for the coaches, and John is ready to, you know, start filling out the lineup the way he wants it to look and the way the organization wants it to look, and trying to get the best out of these dudes. That's the goal, right, is not to put a guy in the cleanup spot who can't hit cleanup. Them days are over. And to see it the way it is today, I think, is a pretty sexy look if you're a Jays fan.
All right, before we let you go, because this lineup looks very much like opening day, we've already discussed Ernie Clement, Santiago Espinal, the various factors involved in that decision. Vogelbach, Votto, we've talked about that. I think you're right. Joey Votto drives the bus in that thing. Is there anything else? And the pitching status of Kevin Gausman needs to be resolved. Anything else? I'm not like, is there a job open in the bullpen? Yeah, was there a minor leaguer who impressed? We saw that Addison Barger was sent down. I don't read anything into when guys go down, but we saw that Addison Barger was sent down. Like, is there anything other than somebody getting hurt that John needs to see right now?
Yeah, I don't think so. Look, I think there is some unknowns about Chad Green. Look, raise your hand if you're a Jays fan, if you got confidence in seeing Chad Green, you know, with a dude at second running out of the bullpen. Look, he's a nice ad. He's a nice piece. He's a veteran guy who's been there and done it before. But, you know, he doesn't have the extra tick and velocity in the fastball, which is a big deal, right? You can overcome some bad breaking balls if you got that little extra gear. He hasn't had that. And, you know, I talked to Petey about the extension on the slider, which you heard him, if you were watching the game yesterday, you heard him having that conversation about they're working on the curveball because they want to ultimately see him in the eighth or ninth inning, no matter where the order set. If there's three lefties in a row, they want to see him sooner than later in that role, because that's why they gave him the money, but that's why they're also trying to add the breaking ball, right? They want to throw breaking balls to lefties, sliders to righties, down and away, but it's a combination of a lot of things. Look, I've been told, but I've never had Tommy John, but I have been told from people that have had it, that extension and flexibility is the last thing. And sometimes you will see the lack of break from a guy's secondary pitch because of the Tommy John. And I think that's sort of what they're concerned, not worried, concerned about with Chad Green, is the extension on the slider and just not throwing that little get me over right down the middle and some dude hitting the tar out of that thing. And, you know, it goes south late in the game. That's where they're at with him. So, long-winded answer to your question, I don't really think so, but I do think there's certain little specific things with the everyday guys that they really count on to seriously hone in the next 13 days and figure it out so they'll be their best opening day.
It may be a matter in the bullpen more of defining roles than who's actually going to be in the bullpen. Sounds to me like what you're saying.
Well, I think they have their closer, and then there's everybody else. And where does everybody else fit in? I think that's the beauty, is they have a bunch of guys that can pitch the seventh and eighth inning.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Garcia, Eric Swanson, Chad Green. You got the two lefties who you got to be careful with those two guys. You know, it's more two lefties and a righty than two righties and a lefty. And, you know, I think they feel very comfortable with everybody. So it gets back to round to that thing. Everybody doing their job. You know, they score more runs. They can't score 4.5 runs. It's got to be 5 runs. You take care of that. And then it takes pressure off of Petey and John to always or not always have to make the right decision to the right guy coming out of the pen. And This is sort of a puzzle piece. They got they got quality enough of the pieces. It's just making sure they're putting the piece in the right spot to when they come in, the outcome of the game is what they want it to be.
Kevin, we're going to let you run, man. Thanks for doing this. We'll chat again tomorrow. Enjoy the weather. It looks a lot better today.
Yeah, it's not windy. You know, it's a little quieter. Yeah. And it is very hard because there's a lot going on. There's minor league teams coming in here, and I'm trying to dodge this guy. There's players. There's producers yelling and screaming at me. You know, Barker. You know, saw Francis. Saw Bichette. He's yelling at me. I saw Turner yelling at me. Hey, I remember you. I just talked to you. It's like, you know, you're trying to do that. I'm trying to give some information, and there's a lot happening.
Well,
I hope I did okay.
Yeah, just make sure nobody hands you a bat and says, Barker, field six.
Oh, boy, you know, the minimum wage at the big league level has went up, Jeff.
Yeah, I would
so
say.
So you may see me, if they did that, hasta mañana, buddy. I'll see you later.
Take care, Kevin.
See you, boys.
All righty. It's Kevin Barker, co-host of this very show. Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. Ben Schulman will have the call of this afternoon's game. It is the Jays and the Pirates. Very much an opening day lineup for the Jays. With the exception, I suppose, of the starting pitcher. I think we now agree that Jose Berríos will be the starting pitcher on opening day in Tampa. How has he looked? Ben Schulman joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, I can say, you know, like that. Now I think we can start in that competitive mode, like pitching, like for winning, for strikeout. I mean, we already built up my pitches, and also I've been practicing pretty much, so I now feel comfortable to go out there and compete.
That is Jose Berríos. As far as we can tell, the opening day starter for the Toronto Blue Jays. That seems to be the indications from the folks down in Dunedin, Ben Nicholson-Smith and others, talking about the pitching lining up with Jose Berríos starting the opener against Tampa Bay, followed by Chris Bassitt. I mean, a lot will depend, I would imagine, on the status of Kevin Gausman as to who follows those two pitchers against the Rays. Kevin Barker and I were saying, I would think if you're the Jays, you want Yusei Kikuchi pitching against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. And of course, that is the series. The Jays go from Tampa to Houston and then to New York. So I would think that in one form or another, you want Yusei Kikuchi ready to go against the Yankees. But we shall see. Kevin Gausman felt good in his side session yesterday. He has been suffering from shoulder fatigue. The Jays are expected to determine next steps tomorrow, whether that will be another side session, a minor league appearance. I can't imagine they would put him back into a Grapefruit League game at this point, although who knows. We do know this today. Chris Bassitt starts against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It is very much an opening day lineup for the Blue Jays. Springer, Bichette, Guerrero Jr., he will DH today, first game back after three off due to a left knee contusion. Justin Turner, Dalton Varsho, Danny Jansen, Kevin Kiermaier, Isaiah Kiner-Falef at third base, Craig Biggio at second. Chris Bassitt, as we mentioned, on the mound. Ben Schulman, Joe Siddle, and Arden Zwelling will have the game for you at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet. Ben Schulman joins us on Blair and Barker. Ben, thanks so much for talking to us today. I greatly, greatly appreciate this. Jose Berríos yesterday, 3 1/3, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. We saw him throw the cutter to left-handed hitters, and both you and Joe talked about at this stage of spring training, you want to get results, but you want to establish your level of comfort in throwing it. Man, he just looks really locked in, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And thanks for having me on, Jeff. Really appreciate it. But he looks really locked in. I think even, you know, for all the talk of different guys being in different shape, Jose obviously always in great shape. And I showed up and saw him at the beginning of spring, And he looks even more athletic, I think, than he did before. He is just, always kind of ready to go, clearly attacked this offseason really well, and looks like he really hasn't missed a beat from what was an impressive season last year. I thought he looked great yesterday. Even the run that was scored, like, I'd give some credit to Trent Grisham for the plate appearance he put up to start the game, fouled off a lot of pitches. And you know, hits are hits. The two hits that he gave up to score that run were not exactly rockets right back up the middle. They were kind of bouncers that beat the defense in the positioning that they started in. So I think that Jose's looked great, and I don't know who starts opening day, whether it's him, whether it's Bassett, whether it's someone else, but if the Blue Jays are starting Jose Barrios on opening day, I feel pretty confident that they're in a good spot there. Only 2 years removed from starting him opening day in 2022 in a very different situation. But he looks great. I'm really impressed with him so far.
Now, you know, we got a little bit of, I don't know if I'd say clarity in Kevin Gausman, but a little idea of what the Blue Jays' immediate plans are for him anyhow today. Do we have any sense where Alek Manoah is? And I guess more importantly, Ben, where the Jays are with Alek Manoah right now?
The only thing we've heard about Manoah since, he was scratched from that start now a couple Sundays ago in Fort Myers is playing catch. So I think at this point, in my opinion, it's not a very optimistic view for at least the start of the season. You never know. I think lots of guys, more than we remember around baseball, end up starting the season maybe on the 15-day IL, and if that's all it is, then it's not, in the grand scheme of things, the biggest deal in the world. But we haven't heard any indication that he's been off a mound yet. And so that, I think, really draws your attention toward Bowden Francis or Mitch White or some of the other guys that could potentially fill in there, because you just do the math kind of with how they want to build people up and how they've been building up guys like Barrios and Bassett. And Gausman is kind of walking the tightrope. Manoah seems to be even a bit behind him. So I wouldn't be super optimistic that Alek Manoah is going to be in there on the first turn of the rotation. But you never know. Things could change.
Ben, it seems very much as if while Joey Votto works his way towards wherever he's working his way towards, whatever that ultimate situation is, it seems very much as if, at least at the start of the year, you'll see Daniel Vogelbach, Davis Schneider, Kevin Biggio, they will all be in the team. You just get the sense, at least this is something Kevin said today and sort of reading between the lines here, you get the sense that the Jays right now are really trying to figure out where they're going to go between Ernie Clement and Santiago Espinal, understanding injuries can happen. Where do you think they're leaning right now?
That's a good question. I mean, it is tough to tell. We haven't really got a good read on that. No one has, specifically stuck out in terms of being mentioned more by Schneider, being mentioned more. We haven't talked much to the front office in the last couple of weeks, haven't had them in front of the media. So it's really, really hard to tell at this point. I think the one interesting thing, though, is the option situation at the end of the day, and you could even bring Schneider into that a little bit, too, and I'm sure you've talked about it, as everyone has. You know, Ernie Clement is the guy in that mix without options, even though Blue Jays fans have seen more of Davis Schneider and they've seen a lot more of Espinal than either of the other two guys. It's actually Clement, who had some previous major league experience with Cleveland and Oakland, that is in a spot where if they don't put him on the 26-man roster, I think he's picked up by someone else. I don't see how he's not, especially at the number that you're going to have to pay him, which is less than $1 million this year. So right. I think that could heavily influence the discussion. And I would personally feel confident about Ernie Clement making this team. And then it comes down to, a couple other guys at second base and what can you do with them? Because not only does Clement have the options or have no options and can play second, short, third, he can also play some outfield, which I talked to him about recently. He played outfield previously in the major leagues, did it a bit for the Bisons last year, and has taken some live reads in the outfield. He hasn't played in a game in spring in the outfield, but he's been taking live reads when they've been doing training or when he's on a day off like they are every other day. So I with every growing day, to be honest, I feel more and more about a positive about Ernie Clement's ability to make this team. And that starts to get really interesting with what you do with some of the other guys in the mix. Cause you mentioned Biggio too. I feel fairly confident that Biggio is on this team playing at second base when there's a right-handed pitcher in. So there's tough decisions coming, I think. And maybe they've already been made and we don't know about it, but we haven't really heard anything. So I don't know that I could make a big declaration about anyone's spot, maybe other than Biggio, who I feel pretty positive about.
Yeah, it just seems as if Ernie Clement's, as if his contact ability would play so well off the bench. And you know, Barker's talked about this a lot, too. He's at the stage of his career where he understands he may have to go 3 days without playing, and then boom, you may have to come into the game in the ninth inning for defense, for whatever reason. And it almost seems as if, from a distance, Ben, I don't know if I'm Santiago Espinal and I've made the All-Star game, however I made it or whatever went into that, I'd really probably have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that somebody just views me as a 26th guy. You know, just mentally, yeah. I'd have a hard time doing that.
Which I could totally see. I mean, at the end of the day, they tendered Espinal. They reached a deal without going to arbitration. It clearly, they value Espinal in certain ways. They, you know, the easiest way to see if someone values you is what kind of money are they giving or offering you. And you know, they decided to bring back Espinal when they could have gone in different directions if they wanted to. So it's hard to know exactly what they want to do going forward, because there is so much traffic at those spots. And while I don't predict it, I do still think there's a small chance that, you know, Davis Schneider, just to start the year, could be looking on the outside too. I wouldn't bet on it, and I'm not, you know, predicting it, but you really never know. And I think we even saw last year, you know, a lot of people thought Otto Lopez was going to be the 26th guy on the team. Not many were predicting Lucas, and that's what ended up happening, was Lucas made the team and played, and Lopez is now a member of the Giants. So it's really honestly hard to tell, because they've seemed to have put value in a lot of these different guys, and it's hard to know what spring training playing time means, because they're all playing about the same amount and all moving around to different positions, that it's going to get really interesting. And hopefully we can, you know, talk to some people maybe in and around the front office, or as it winds down, get some more out of John Schneider, so we can figure out maybe what direction they're going to go in.
In addition to figuring out where Kevin Gausman is, deciding how that whole situation shakes out with the second baseman, what do you think the front office and John Schneider still need to see as we're a little more than 2 weeks away from opening day? What do you think the outstanding questions are for this team at this point?
I think there's still a question of, like, let's say in the hypothetical world that Alek Manoah is not in the first turn. Well, and you still got to make a choice. I think Bowden Francis is who a lot of people have picked right now to be in that spot, but you still got to make a choice there of who's going to be in the rotation, and then who's in that final spot of the bullpen. I think the Blue Jays entered this spring with maybe one bullpen spot available. You have guys like Mitch White, who's also contending for that starting spot. You got Nate Pearson, Zach Pop. They both pitched for the team last year, and a ton of really, really strong guys that are in the minors right now as well, that are looking to push the major league roster. So I think there's at least one spot available in the bullpen without a doubt, whether it's Francis, White, or others that are contending for that spot, that needs to be locked down. And you never know. I think that a lot of the guys who we didn't know would impact the Blue Jays in the way they did last year ended up having a big impact, like Jay Jackson and others. So this could be a more important spot than you end up realizing. And when one bullpen guy goes down, everyone shifts up. So I think this is still a pretty big thing to be determined for the Blue Jays, where they go with that last bullpen spot.
Who do you think is the next man up in AAA? God forbid they need to replace Jordan Romano or something happens. I mean, clearly it would be somebody off the major league roster. But is there somebody on the horizon you see this organization developing as a back of the bullpen guy? You know, we've heard Zach Pop in the past. Nate Pearson, you know, at this point, what is Nate Pearson? Apparently he's got a split-fingered pitch. Maybe that can be effective. Maybe that can help him solidify himself as a late-inning option at some point, but is there somebody in the organization that might be the next guy that is being honed into a closer for this organization?
Yeah. I think it's TJ Brock, if I had to pick one. I think that they put him in some big spots, and he had a bit of an up and down year last year. He dominated high A, went up to double A and had struggles, but that's, I think, a pretty natural thing in the minor leagues when you jump level midseason. And I'm guessing that he'll start at double A again and have a chance there to close games again. He had 13 saves last year, which in a minor league season is a good number of saves. And he was a closer at Ohio State, where they drafted him. And these college relievers tend to move pretty quickly because you kind of figure out what you have early on. So I think TJ Brock is someone that could be interesting. Jordan Romano's a free agent after 2025, I think, is the year. So, you know, they're going to definitely need to figure that out going forward. And a homegrown closer is so great, because if you don't have one, you end up spending, you know, $20 million a year, like the Mets did on Edwin Diaz or something, or, you know, Josh Hader going to Houston. So I think that TJ Brock right now is the front runner, but you never know. Jordan Romano was a starter in the minors and kind of right near the end of his minor league career converted into a closer. So you can find these guys, but Brock does seem to be the guy that they're putting a lot of weight into.
Any chance that Yariel Rodriguez, do you think, makes the team out of spring training? I mean, he's going to pitch Sunday. That's going to be his debut. Two innings. According to his contract, he only has options available this year. Is there any chance that maybe if Gossman continues to be behind him and Noah doesn't answer the bell, that Yariel Rodriguez pitches himself into contention here at all?
I mean, I'll get like a little way too nerdy and pull off some Star Wars and say only Sith steal an absolute. So I can't say like there's a 0% chance that he makes the team, but I would seriously doubt it with the lack of pitching he had last year and then the setback that he had this year. I still think he pitches for the team this year, but you mentioned the options. They have the ability to do that this year, which they don't going forward. I think it's a bit of like a use it or lose it situation for them, where they can bring him along a little bit more gradually, not only from not pitching, but also from, you know, moving over from an Asian style of baseball over to a North American style of baseball, which is very different. So I would guess like 99% that he starts the year in the minors. But that doesn't mean that 5-6 weeks later or even sooner, he could be up in the majors once they just kind of have him in full swing.
Ben, really good of you to do this today. Really appreciate your time. I know you've got a big game ahead of you this afternoon. Should be a lot of fun. The game is on TV. Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Turner, Varsho, Jansen, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio, Bassett. It really does feel like opening day. Thanks for this, Ben.
Thank you, Jeff. Always happy to come on.
Be well. That is Ben Shulman, Blue Jays voice on Sportsnet. 1 o'clock will be the first pitch today. Ben, Arden Swelling, Joe Siddle with the call as the Jays continue their Grapefruit League campaign and with an eye towards opening day, which is approaching very quickly. The Jays start the season on the road in Tampa. Then they go on to face the Houston Astros. Then they go to Yankee Stadium before returning to Toronto to take on the Seattle Mariners. And of course, one of the stories we're following, along with the rest of Major League Baseball, is Gerrit Cole's MRI. The Yankees telling reporters today, Aaron Boone telling reporters today, they are still gathering information on Gerrit Cole's right elbow. The Yankees, I thought, were very clear, and they're not always clear with injuries, but they were very, very clear when the reports came out initially that there would be more than one opinion needed. And that stands to reason. It's a big year for Gerrit Cole. He's got an option to decide whether or not he exercises it. So there is, in addition to Gerrit Cole's importance to the Yankees, Gerrit Cole's also at the stage of his career right now where, I mean, he has to be careful. So it's understandable that the Yankees might be slow playing this a bit. But look, I mean, for the Blue Jays, that's a tough start to the season. If you're looking for positives, though, if you're looking for positives with the Blue Jays, the positives right now are that you're not going to see Justin Verlander. He's not going to start the year for Houston, and you're not going to see Gerrit Cole likely. So there you go. You take your positive things where you can find them. 1 o'clock is the first pitch this afternoon. Kevin Barker is in Florida. He'll be back with me tomorrow. Again, if you're listening via podcast, please rate and review. Have yourself a great day. We'll chat tomorrow.